Hello and welcome to the KitCast, very special KitCast. After the A-League Premiership has been decided, Melbourne City, of course, claiming that honour after beating the Wellington Phoenix 2-1. With me to discuss it all as a panel, first up, whose intro did not record, is Lucas Ronaldo. So also here, the Bulgarian correspondent, Petar Petrov. How are you? Good to have you back.
Yeah, I'm good. Hi, everyone. Happy to be back on the KitCast in this special episode and really looking forward to the chat with you.
Oh, lots of very, very special stuff to come, especially at the end of the show, I must say. A little sneak peek, but also it's truly an international affair tonight because Jason Pine from New Zealand is joining us on the KitCast. Welcome, mate.
Great to be here, guys. Yeah, no, exciting game tonight. I thought after the first half it might be one of those where a few Phoenix fans might switch off and head to bed early over here. But, yeah, exciting second half and Melbourne City hanging on. I think probably the right result, but good to see the Phoenix boys put up a bit of a fight in the second half.
Well, Pardy, literally all I know about the game is the little Google scoreboard that I've got up here because, I did not watch a second of it. So I've seen that Melbourne City scored 2 goals in the first 10 minutes. Tell us about that.
Yeah, both from corners, both sloppy defending, really. The first one was an own goal, swung towards the near post, flicked on by Sam Sutton, straight into the back of the net. Second one, you know, almost identical, except it was flicked on by Andrew Naboot and finished by Jamie McLaren from close range. So all of a sudden, you know, City go bang, bang, and you know, it feels as though it's going to be one of those where they just run away with it. Ufuk Tele made two key changes at halftime, brought Clayton Lewis and Reno Piscopo on. That really changed the game. He started with two youngsters out of the academy, Riley Bidwar and Jackson Manuel. But yeah, second half was a different story. And once Ben Wayne scored, you know, it was all on for young and old. And Melbourne City really at the end were hanging on. Like I say, I think it was the right result. But yeah, I think the Phoenix gave them a bit of a scare at Amy Park.
Lucas, were you a bit surprised, Piney, about sort of once Wayne scored first, because first half seemed a bit pedestrian really from Wellington. Do you think the crowd played any sort of effect? It almost looked like Wellington thought they were the ones that were fighting for the title, even though they had nothing to play for at the end.
Yeah, it was funny, wasn't it, to see all those victory fans in there, you know, obviously egging Wellington on. I mean, as you boys know, Wellington has spent the entire season pretty much over in Australia playing out of Wollongong and really not drawing big crowds at all. So to have a crowd there would have been exciting for them. And, yeah, I think they were probably lifted by it. And by the same token, I wonder whether Melbourne City perhaps not necessarily intimidated by it, but something they wouldn't have been used to at a home game against a team other than Melbourne Victory. So, yeah, the second half was completely different. And I think from Wellington's point of view, it needed to be because, you know, while there was nothing riding on the game as far as their finals hopes are concerned, we know they're going to finish sixth regardless. You've got to take a bit of momentum into finals, and I think they probably will now off the back of that second half.
Well, since they were and are locked into finishing sixth, they will be playing Western United in that first round of finals, the elimination final. Sian Ed sent us a question about that, a bit of a tactical question. Might get onto that a little bit later. But, Petar, why did Melbourne City have the better of Wellington in the first half to the people who know absolutely nothing, like me?
I actually think they were a bit lucky with the early goal. I mean, with all the big crowd and the Victory supporters there, I think they could have gone nervous if they didn't get an early goal or two like they did. So yeah, the set piece was the best way to go for it. And like once they got the first goal, they were pretty like in the first half. I think they were pretty comfortable. And also the fact that Wellington played a very, I would say, passive back three didn't help them in the first half. The second half, when they switched to a 4-3-3, they looked a lot better. And I think their squads generally, it's made to play a back four, not a back three, and it showed in the second half. I think if they go to the finals in the back three and without Clayton Lewis, if he's clearly fit because he played almost like more than 50 minutes, but if he wasn't back, they would have struggled a lot more when playing a back three than a back four.
Well, Lucas, it was just Phoenix were within one goal for over half an hour in that second half. Did they look, or did you feel that they were a real chance of grabbing that second?
I think City were always the better team. There was a stage where they sort of began to gather momentum, maybe had a couple of half chances, But in reality, I think if anyone was going to score, I'm sort of getting to the stage where I thought City might grab one on the counter because they were opening themselves up quite a lot defensively. But I think Wellington will be happy with that second half because in a game where City had everything to play for, Wellington had nothing to play for. They showed that they can pretty much match it, especially, well, in that second half. So I think going into the finals, I think it was mentioned on commentary that a couple of years ago under Rudin, the Wellington had a few smashings just before finals, which sort of killed their momentum. So I think that should, even though they lost, I think it'll give them a bit of hope going into the finals.
Piney, how do you reckon Fuktale would have been trying to rev up his Phoenix boys pre-game? Because obviously nothing table-wise to play for, but pride at stake, a bit of a warm-up for the finals, going to be playing at the same venue, of course.
Yeah, I think, you basically go out and try and win every football game you play, don't you? But I think there were a couple of key things tonight for Fuktale. One was not picking up any more injuries, and we saw that, in fact, he didn't start, in fact, didn't even play either of David Ball or Gail Sandoval. Biscopo came on at halftime, of course, so clearly trying to, you know, protect those players, those key players from injury. Gave a couple of his young kids a go. But also, you know, I think, you know, without wanting to labour the point, you do want to go in with momentum. And Lucas is right. There was a, you know, under Rudan, I remember they went across to Perth. It was either the last game of the season or the penultimate one, and Rudan played a bunch of kids or left some starters out, and they got beat 5-0 over there, and it didn't really help them once they got to the finals and ended up dipping out in the first round to Melbourne Victory at Amy Park. So, look, I think, you know, Fuktale probably doesn't need to say too much to these players now. They know the situation. They know, you know, the system he wants to play, and we can obviously talk a bit more about what he might do in the game against Western United. But, yeah, I'm not sure they needed a heck of a lot of motivation. You know, they just they're there now. They've got a huge game coming up on Saturday against Western United, and as I say, a nice little springboard into it tonight.
Petr, Melbourne City winning, of course, the Premier's Plate again for second season in a row. That is, do you reckon they were the best team all season? Because they were at the top all season, pretty much, of course. But they looked a bit shaky there towards the end.
Yeah, I think looking at them as individual players, they have definitely the best squad in my opinion. When they click, they're like they play fantastic football and. Especially at the start of the season, we could see that, like, when they are fit and after, when all of them are fit and ready to play the way Patrick sets them up to play, I think they are the best team in the league. At the moment, I think Victoria are in slightly better position. I think they're in better form. Maybe the Champions League had a bit of a toll on the City squad. And the fact that they're missing Aiden O'Neill, I think he's a very, very important player, as well as Berenguer, of course, maybe the Joey Warren medalist. So, yeah, when they have all of their players fit, I think they're the best team. But at the moment, I'd say maybe Victoria slightly ahead.
Speaking of the Victory, Lucas, they beat Sydney 4-1 on Saturday night on the Channel 10 game. So they were on top spot for, what, a good 48 hours, something like that. But obviously didn't end up getting it, but what did you make of that game and their performance against the Sky Blues in Sydney?
Sydney were awful. Victory, it was a very exciting game, actually. A lot of brilliant goals. D'Agostino, maybe a contender for the goal of the season, runs from the halfway line, cuts inside. But I think Victory, that was just showing how big the gap is between them and Sydney. Sydney are just lifting the Premier's Plate as we speak. But to be honest, I think that Victory are for me, my favourites, because it's not like a normal final series where you get the top team has the advantage of playing at home. If it's a final between one and two, it's going to be at the same ground and there's probably going to be more Victory fans anyway. So I think the Premier's Plate has never meant less in this situation because Victory have as much of an advantage. No team has ever won the double 2 years in a row. So for Victory, I think they're in a good position, and I think they showed why on Saturday.
I'm just going to sidetrack us just for a sec, because Lucas, you said you're watching the TV in the background there. Piney, a question for you. When you're watching the TV, like you are every second week or mostly every week for Wellington for the past couple seasons, do you find yourself yelling at TV supporting the Phoenix, or are you trying to remain a bit neutral in your journalistic commentary role?
It's a great question. I'm a football fan like we all are, you know, and while you do need to stay journalistically neutral, and I know there are a lot of people probably on your side of the ditch who don't believe I do that during commentary sometimes, but you know, I try to remain neutral, but I do enjoy the success of a team from New Zealand, as I'm sure, you know, most of the media over this side of the ditch do. That doesn't mean that you can't, you know, enjoy and appreciate what's happening in the other teams in the A-League, because I enjoy watching all of them and seeing, you know, Melbourne City lift the Premier's plate and watching Melbourne Victory play so well and enjoying the rides that the Mariners and Adelaide are taking us on. All of those things as well excite me as a football fan. But, yeah, I think, you know, I'm a Kiwi after all. So, you know, if I want a team to win the A-League, it's probably going to be the one that comes from New Zealand. But yeah, and it's a bit different when I'm sitting in my lounge rather than, you know, actually sitting in a commentary box when you have to try and beg it back a little bit.
Do you think sometimes it makes you – I know from being in Adelaide and working in the media here, I tend to be harsher on Adelaide than I would on any other team, because, you know, the emotional connection to the team. Do you find that as well sometimes?
Yeah, it's like when you're if you're a father coaching your own son, you tend to be harder on him than anybody else on the team. I can speak from experience there as well. Yeah, I think so. You know, because you do, you find yourself a little bit invested in the team. You see more of them than the other teams, and therefore you understand the nuances of the way they play, and you also understand, as I know you will understand, Lucas, you know, how good they can be, because you see them play well. And then when you see them not quite reach those standards, you think to yourself, well, why the heck can't they play like they did last week? So, yeah, there's a little bit of that, absolutely.
I'm not sure that Tony Popovich will agree on the father part.
That's a great point, Peter.
You're overseas, Peter, in Bulgaria, which doesn't have an A-League team. Do you have affinities for any particular side?
A hard one. I really like the way City play, because I can't say that I'm a fan of the City football group, but I like the way they try to set up their teams and like all over the world. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Pep Guardiola, so maybe slightly prefer City to win it this year again, but don't tell anyone.
Well, I think before we get on to a bit of finals preview action, we might have to do the KitKast Awards ceremony. It's been the awards ceremony that people have been looking forward to all season. I've got no doubt about that. We'll start with the team of the season. That's what we've got on our rundown here, the rundown that has been very, very hastily put together. But Lucas, we'll start with you, your team of the season.
So I went, I think Birri Giddy in goal is the obvious choice. Defence, I've gone Javi Lopez. Maybe Adelaide is coming into it there, but I think he's been brilliant this season. After a pretty shaky first season, he's shown why he needs to be playing right back rather than centre midfield this year. Curtis Good and Lacroix, who I think is up there for being the player of the season this year. He's been excellent at West United. Jason Davidson, a left back. Midfield three of Brimmer, Berenguer, and Peña. Peña being unbelievable at Newcastle. I think they've not got Mikel Tadze in there, but their foreign has been incredible this year. Urania on the right, which is a bit odd, but had to get him in somehow. And McLaren up front with the man who I believe should win the Johnny Warren medal, Craig Goodwin, on the left. But yeah, I think the majority of it is fairly straightforward, but maybe I think the midfield's probably the hardest part.
Piney, how many Phoenix players have you got in your team this season?
I've got a couple, actually. I've got a couple. I think I've spread mine out, not on purpose, but across the league. A couple of Phoenix players. I've got Ollie Sale in goal. I know Berigetti's been amazing. Jamie Young's probably the other one in the conversation. But having seen Ollie Sale every week and the saves he's made, yes, the Phoenix have conceded a lot of goals. But I think he's been excellent, and wouldn't be at all surprised to see him take off overseas after this season, even though he's got a year left on his contract. I know there's big interest in Ollie Sale from overseas. My back four, I've got Jason Guerrier at right back. I agree on Lacroix. I found it hard to leave Curtis Good out, but I wanted to put Kai Rolls in. I think he's been terrific for the Mariners. I've got Davidson at left back as well. My midfield is Jake Brimmer, Ulises Davila, and Marco Rojas, which is a little bit – that's cheating a little bit. He's more of an attacking midfielder. Mikkel Tadsey, McLaren, and Goodwin up top. So they're not going to do a lot of defending that team, but they'll score a lot of goals.
Peter, how similar is your side to those of our other two panelists?
Yeah, mine's more similar to Piney's, actually. I had to I love Birgiri. I think he's fantastic, but I had to go with Oliseu. I think without him, the Knicks are not making the finals this year, definitely. He's been terrific in every aspect of goalkeeping, and I really think he deserves a move to Europe. He's fantastic. On the right of the back four, I'd gone for Guerrier. I think he's been the most solid right back throughout the whole year. If Josh Risden had stayed fit, maybe I'd pick him. He was fantastic at the start of the season, but now I have to go with Guerrier. And Lacroix for obvious reasons. I think he's the best center back in the league. And alongside him, I also picked Rose. I think the way he's changed his game in the past 2 years, he's gone like levels above what he was before that. On the left, Davidson's been terrific. I can't praise him enough. And my midfield three is same as Lucas. It's a bit too attacking with Bremer, Berenguer, and Peña, but I think they're all shoo-in for the player of the season. And top, I went with Goodwin and Rojas on the wings. Both, like, for me, they're the best two wingers currently in the league. And I had to go with Becker. I love Jamie McLaren, but I think the things Becker has done with a far weaker side in Newcastle, he's just fantastic. The way he plays his overall game, the way he drops back, helps in build-up and midfield, I think he's the best striker in the league.
Piney, as our New Zealand expert here on this panel, a question for you about Oliseu. I've just had a look at the always reliable Wikipedia page of Mr. Oliseu, and I've seen that he's got two caps for New Zealand, both in 2022. Firstly, is that correct? And secondly, is he the starting keeper that you kind of look for, look upon for the next few years?
Yeah, well, the Wikipedia is right in this case, which is, I'm sure, a surprise to some people. But yes, just the two caps for Oliseu, both this year in the Oceania World Cup qualifying tournament, which took place back in, March, April? Yeah, a month or so ago. And you may not remember this, but about three or four Phoenix players went for the first part of that tournament because it was outside the FIFA window. Then they came back. Yeah, some others came in. So Oliseu played the first two games, kept two clean sheets, and then went back home again. So not much more he can do there. The big question now is for the Intercontinental Playoff coming up in mid-June against Costa Rica, is Oliseu the goalkeeper, or is the incumbent Stefan Marinovic, former Wellington Phoenix goalkeeper, of course, is he the man? He's been the generally accepted number one now for a while, but Oliseu is really making a case. He's been, as we've all seen, excellent this season. He's done all he can. He's attracted a lot of interest from overseas. So that's one big, big decision for our national coach, Danny Hay, to make in that game against Costa Rica. I think, Oliseu's 26 years old. We know goalkeepers play a lot longer than outfield players. He might have a decade at the top level. So, yeah, I think we'll see a lot of all whites caps. If we check Wikipedia in a decade, if it's still going, it might have more like 52 or 62 caps alongside his name.
Do you think he'll get that starting keeper place against Costa Rica in the playoff?
If I'm picking the team, I'd pick him. Yeah, Stefan Marinovic is a terrific goalkeeper, never lets you down, big imposing guy, very experienced. But Ollie's just got a bit about him. He's got the hot hand, he's playing well. His distribution is better. I just think he's a better all-round keeper. And like I say, it'll be a big call for Danny Hay to make. But if it's me, I'd pick Oliseu, yes.
I'm not sure if you have like more info about this, but I think Oliseu also like he strikes me as a guy that's a leader in the team. He's very vocal, always talks a lot to his defenders. That's something I like. I don't like keepers that like just let things happen. I think that's a big bonus for him as well.
Yeah, absolutely, Peter. Yeah, and you're right he is, and obviously he's taken on the captaincy of the team. You know, not that he need that armband to be a leader within the team, but yeah, even with only two caps, he's well regarded in team, and yeah, he certainly lets his defenders know, you know, what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong. So yeah, you won't ever get a quiet night at the football of Ollie Sales playing in goal.
Pretty incredible that he was bench ridden for so many seasons at the Phoenix. I know he had good players ahead of him, but geez, he's a cracker, isn't he? But speaking of cracking players, Lucas, your player of the season for the 2021-2022, there's a bit of a tongue twister, that season.
yeah, I think for me, it's got to be Goodwin. I think when you consider how important he is, I think that comes into it a lot with a player of the season award. If you take Goodwin out of United, I don't think we come near the finals, to be honest. I think he's been incredible. Goals, assists, he's come back and just slotted straight in. I think there was a few times maybe earlier on where he had a few quiet games, but especially since Halloran's left, he's taken the armband, of course, since Mork left too, and he's just taken on a mantle. The amount, I think he's struck up a great partnership with Ibasuki because he's such a great crosser of the ball, and you got this guy who's just a wins everything in the air. So, yeah, I think it has to be Craig Goodwin to be Adelaide's second ever Johnny Warren medalist after Marcos Flores.
Funny.
Yeah, I've got to go with Goodwin as well. I would have liked to have seen it gone to Kai Rolls, but they very rarely give it to a defender. And I mean, I know I mentioned him in my team of the year, but I just think he's been utterly magnificent for that team, for that Mariners team, especially with Ruan Tongyek dropping out. He's, you know, I've seen Kai Rolls, we all have, watched him play for a few years, and he's been a good solid centre back, but I think he's gone to another level this year. So he's an honourable mention for me. But yeah, I've got to go with Goodwin. Lucas is absolutely right. You know, the way that he elevates Adelaide United, you know, gives it to him for me. It's rare, isn't it, for an Australian to win it? I think Nathan Burns was the last one. He was at Wellington back in 14-15 and had a great season, which earned his move to Japan. But, yeah, I'd be if I had to cast a vote, I'd be casting it for Craig Goodwin.
That's all.
People will call me biased on this, but I have to say Behringer. I think he's been absolutely terrific. I think it's also a bit of a recency bias because he was injured for the last couple of games. So maybe people forget his earlier games, but I think he's been outstanding. I think I also believe that it's maybe a bit more debatable this year. Like a lot of players have been on a very high level. You can say, always say Peña. He's been outstanding. Lacroix, even Bremer, Rojas. I think Rojas in the second part of the season has been really, really good and very influential for victory. I'll go with Behringer just to be different.
Very interesting call. Let us know your Johnny Warren medalist, predicted Johnny Warren medalist, in the comments of wherever you are tuning in, if you are tuning in live and not on the podcast version of the show. But moving on, Lucas, manager of the season.
On mute there for a second. Oh, this is a tough one, I reckon. For me, it's between three, which are Ufuk Tele. Actually, maybe four. The four in my head were Ufuk Tele, Nick Montgomery, John Aloisi, and Carl Veer. In the end, I've gone Nick Montgomery. I think Mariners have flown under the radar for a little bit of how good they've done. Of course, they were good last season, but to go through a change, such a good manager of Alan Stajcic to leave, and Montgomery's really done a great job all year. Everyone, I think, sort of thought they were going to tail off at some point, and they just kept going. So, yeah, for me, Nick Montgomery, Ufuk Tele, and maybe a close second.
Let's mix up the order here. Petter, your manager of the season.
My top three would be Monty, Ufuk Tele, and Popovic, but I'll go with Tony Popovic. I think the difference between last year's victory side and what they're doing now is just, it's a bit of a mainstream pick, but I think he's done extraordinarily well. Just, you can't compare the two sides, absolutely. I have to pick Popovic.
Barney.
Yeah, the names are the same. The ones I had written down. It's a 3 or 4 horse race. Yeah, honourable mention to Ufok Tele. The adversity he's faced and what he's got out of this team is very, very credible and well worth recognition. Popper obviously has had a huge impact at Melbourne Victory. When you look at where they were last year and where they are now, you can't deny that that's got a lot to do with Tony Popovich. And I like what John Aloisi's done at Western United as well. Really, I mean, when you think about the way he left Brisbane and perhaps the slightly unfair criticism he got there to come in and turn a bunch of pretty workmanlike players really into a team that's been right up there all season is also a pretty special achievement. But I have to go with Monty as well. I look at that team and I look at the way they're playing and I look at what Nick Montgomery's had to work with and the tough calls he's made. Let's not forget they've done it for the back end of the season without Ollie Bozanic even in the side, and he was your main man at the start of the season. So, yeah, Nick Montgomery is my pick for Boss of the Year.
Another question for you, Pine. Do you anticipate that there are going to be any managerial changes within the 12 clubs in the A-League, A-League men, between now and the start of the season?
Well, I guess MacArthur need a new boss, don't they? So there's one I'm not sure what the story is out west in Perth, whether they have made a decision there on what's happening over there. Other than that, I know there is interest in Monty. I know that, from talking to a couple of people who are close to him, I know that, he's impressed a lot of people. I don't know whether that'll be a MacArthur situation for him. I know that MacArthur were also sniffing around Ufok Tele for a long period as well. So, yeah, other than that, obviously if you make the top six, you're pretty safe. We know Mark Rudan's got a couple-of-year contract at Western Sydney to turn things around there. Arthur Pappas at Newcastle, same deal. Warren Moon at Brisbane, not sure what's going on there. But, yeah, I think it'll be a relatively settled off-season. It'll be very interesting to see who turns up at MacArthur, though.
Lucas, who do you think... I don't think the Perth managerial slot has been confirmed. Who's going to be filling that? Do you think Ruben Zadkovic is going to stay on or not so much?
I think they surely can't, to be honest. I think it's a massive job that needs to be done there. And in the time that he's had the job, they haven't performed. Of course, they won against City last week out of nowhere. But, I think he didn't shine himself in a great light after the Western United game when they got smashed. Some of his comments in there. He was right that he needed to have a big go at his side. But I think there was a few things he said during that press conference when he berated his team, what is a very young Perth team that maybe would have been better behind closed doors. I would be very, very surprised if they keep him on. There's not a great deal off the top of my head of managers available. One who I keep thinking is inevitably going to be an A-League manager is Harry Kewell. I think that is a matter of time before that happens one day. He's had a lot of goes in England and that hasn't worked. And I would not be surprised at all if in the next, I doubt it'll be Perth, but if in the next couple of years one team decides to pull that trigger and go a big name appointment.
I think Graham Arnold would have been a shout if he was free, but at the moment I actually think they could stick with Zadkovic. The fact that the Lachman, when he was talking about his new contact, said that he believes in Zadkovic and wants to be part of his progress with the coup and stuff like that, shows that maybe he will get some chance next season.
Yeah.
Lucas, I don't think we're going to go too deep into a preview for it, but Sydney actually have one game remaining for the rest of the season against Brisbane tomorrow night, Wednesday night. Or Tuesday night, sorry, which could be the least watched A-League game in history, I reckon. Sydney have had their struggles this season. They're going to finish 7th or 8th. So if they beat Brisbane, they'll finish 7th. If they don't, they'll finish 8th. Steve Corica, is he under pressure?
Absolutely. I think he's under massive pressure. I think it's more they need a revamp of the team. When we talked about manager of the year, the reason I didn't say Popovich is that he had a completely new team. So even though they went from bottom to first, it was also a completely new team. So I wasn't really, it was also partly a very good recruitment. And I think that Sydney sort of needed to do the same thing. Maybe not completely strip it because this is a quality side, but they need four or five key players that have kept the same team for so long that it was inevitable that it was going to sort of fizzle out. I think you've got to keep him. I don't think you can sack him just yet, but I think you've just got to refresh the team and then hopefully you can sort of come back into it. Sydney have too good a team to be outside the finals for much longer.
You look at that team and there are, by my count anyway, there are eight guys over 30. And, you know, as you say, Lucas, they've been such amazing servants for that team. Ninkovic, Wilkinson, Lafondra, Redmayne, Barbaroussis, Bratton, we haven't seen much of. Lafondra, not sure whether he's coming back. You know, amazing players for Sydney during that period of sustained success. But at some point, you do have to regenerate, don't you? And the results don't lie. The table doesn't lie. It hasn't worked. Yes, they had the Champions League in amongst it all as well. But even when they went away to the Champions League, they'd had a pretty mediocre season up to that point anyway. So, yeah, I'm like, I don't think Corrick is under pressure for his job, but he's certainly under pressure to rebuild that team and get them back into the finals because, you know, they are one of the biggest clubs in the competition. And to finish outside the top six just won't do for their supporters and their ownership group.
Yeah, massive overhaul needed. But, Petr, if they don't start well next season, surely it can't last long, Corica.
Yeah, what I want to say there, they have just exactly 10 players over 30 years. That's a lot. I think, haven't checked, but I think that's the highest average age in the league, especially if we consider starting 11s. And yeah, especially the fact that they have so many star players, if you want to call them that. Like, I'm pretty sure their wage bill is pretty high as well. So he definitely should be under pressure when it comes to recruitment and rebuilding the side. But I think he still deserves a bit more time. Like, he's done pretty well in the previous three seasons. Maybe most Sydney fans won't agree with me, but I think Corrick is a good coach, and maybe if they give him another season, he'll get him back on track.
Well, we went a bit off track from the award ceremony there, but we're going to pull it back in. One last award to hand out. Lucas is going to be the first to do so. His little trophy of this particular award, the moment of the year, the moment of the season. Lucas, what is it in the A-League men?
I was really stuck on a moment of the season. Yeah, because
much preparation for this one. Were you about?
Yeah, Harper's just put this in and sprung it on ago. Us. But off the top of my head, I immediately go to Adelaide coming from behind from nowhere against Sydney a couple of weeks ago. That's obviously fresh in the memory and bias there. But I think it's not a moment, but I think for me it has been just the amount of young players. So all the different guys that we've seen from an Adelaide perspective, you've got the likes of Irukunda, but around the league you've got so many guys that have come in and been excellent. So if you can bundle all those together, all the young guys that have sort of come in and scored or come in and had a moment in the sun, I think that's part of it. But for a moment, I'm going to go Goodwin against Sydney.
Piney, as we put the graphic up, what was your moment of the season?
Yeah, my mind immediately went to Ben Garuccio's Scorpion goal. I think, you know, one of those goals like Riley McGree's a few seasons ago that kind of goes around the world and brings, you know, a million eyes onto the A-League men. So I enjoyed that. But I guess from a Wellington point of view, Nicholas Pennington's 97th minute winner against Perth Glory 3 or 4 weeks ago, Ufuk Talle, the coach, was in his apartment because he was under COVID protocols. Chiefy, Giancarlo Italiano, the assistant coach, and Paul Gothard, the goalkeeping coach, were in charge. One all going into, as I say, the, you know, deep into added time. A game that Wellington had bossed, really, but looked as though they were only going to get a point from. But just the explosion of joy when you score a 97th minute winner from a pretty unlikely source, his first A-League goal, and just the sheer ecstasy of the team running together and just, you know, gathering around the touchline and hugs and high fives all around. So yeah, for me, that was a pretty cool moment, especially given all the adversity that Wellington have faced.
Petr, I'm liking the range of answers we're getting for this question. Are you going to continue the variety with your nomination?
Yeah, I was going to be boring and say the Garuccio one as well, but Paño also mentioned it. So I'm going to say Garanco scoring his first goal the year after his brother broke through and set the league on fire. I think Garanco, he really looks even better than his brother, which is, whoa, he's like, is he 16 or 17? I'm not sure, but yeah, what a player this kid is.
Oh, both yours were way better than mine.
Oh, and maybe Daniel Peña fighting with Matt Simon would be up there as well.
Yeah, Lucas, I'll just swing back to something that was at the start of the rundown, but I just completely missed. Adelaide versus Western United, two teams that will be in the finals. A very quick word on that game.
Yeah, both fullbacks scoring. Just speaking about unlikely sources. Kiddo has been phenomenal this season, was great again. Adelaide conceding early, looked very nervy early on. I think even though after the start and was very poor defending for the goal that Adelaide conceded, I think that Popovic-Barr partnership is crucial. I think that's going to – I hope that stays together in the finals. Jakobsen's now back from injury, so there's a bit of a temptation to start him. But the other thing was Yenge playing his first game in 5 months. So a few big ins and a bit of a selection headache for Carl Beard going into the Mariners next week.
Lucas, I'm just interested on Carl Viet because, you know, we've talked about a few coaches. He got a mention before. You know, he's obviously quietly gone about his business. But how big an influence on that Adelaide side is Carl Viet?
Oh, it's unbelievable the job that he's done. Because I think the thing about Carl is that you sort of don't mention him in terms of, like, the top managers in the competition because his style is very simple. They just go out. He's spoken about, especially with Irukunda, that – The game where he scored the crack against Perth the other week, he said, "Oh yeah, he missed four or five of them beforehand, but we don't want to tell him to. We don't want to not encourage him to shoot. We're just going to keep giving him no advice. He's only 16. He can play and just have fun," which I think is the sign of a very confident coach. And yeah, no one in Adelaide thought we're going to finish top six this year. So yeah, he's done a fantastic job, and it's all down to him. I think at times I've probably been critical of the defence, but he's got that right and bringing in two guys who weren't in the picture at the start of the year. So, yeah, I think 100% of the credit can go down to Carl Villa. And he's lost his assistant mid-year, Ross Aloisi, who was a very involved assistant as well. And he's brought in Damien Murray, a legend of South Australian football, and it's worked a charm.
Well, for the league as a whole, lots of people's big highlight and a big talking point has been the youth coming through, looking very promising. I think Adelaide really just encapsulate that, don't they? But, of course, Western United lost that game 2-1 to Adelaide, and they will be playing in their elimination final. I believe it is on Saturday night. The Wellington Phoenix, Pioneers Wellington Phoenix. How do you see that game going, Jason?
Well, I mean, if history tells us anything, it's that the Wellington Phoenix have got the oil over Western United. They've only lost to them once, and that was in the very first game of Western United's life. It was at Wellington Stadium. Mark Rudan had just taken over, and Besart Berisha scored the goal that gave them a 1-0 win. Since then, it's been all Wellington, really, in that rivalry. And I think if you asked Wellington fans who they would have liked to have faced in the top six, I think 99% of them would have said Western United. You know, Central Coast Mariners and Adelaide United flying at the moment. You know, five wins apiece on the bounce. Western United, yeah, obviously they're a good side, a very good side. But yeah, I think Wellington will certainly back themselves to go there and get a result. And just to hark back to what we were saying earlier, today's second half will certainly help with that. I think, you know, Clayton Lewis coming back into the side was key. Reno was really good when he came on. We'll get David Ball back out of his moon boot and into the starting side, and Gail Sandoval as well. So, look, I think Phoenix fans will feel pretty buoyed by this. A one-off game, of course. You know, two wins against Western United this season. I'm stacking up all these things, really. You know, Western United are likely to come out and win it 2 or 3-0. But, yeah, but it'll be. I think it'll be a good game.
in the cauldron of Amy Park when Western United are playing at home. I know Lucas is predicting that Wellington are going to win as well. But if they don't, if Western United do win, why do you think that will have been the case, Lucas?
Yeah, I think, like you say, I think Wellington will pull off a bit of an upset here. Western United on paper are a better side, but they're the only team really that's coming into this final series in poor form. With Wellington picking up results, Mariners, Reds both won 5 in a row, City have just won. So I think Western United are set up brilliantly, and they've brilliantly set up defensively in particular, likes of Lacroix at the back that we mentioned. But for me, I think this is probably the perfect opportunity for Wellington to go and cause an upset and what could be one of the best stories in Australian football in recent times if they were to cause an upset and go even further.
Petar, I know you love a good story. What do you think about this game?
Yeah, I think that also, as Lucas said, they're not in the greatest form they've been this season, but also they've been hit by a lot of injuries. They have Risden out, Pierre's was out, Diamanti, Ustica. I think Topor Stanley picked up an injury in the last game as well. So, yeah, it's not the best moment. I think if they win, it would be down to individual quality, something like Privilege scoring a fantastic goal. Wacky Wells, he's been great as well in the second part of the season. But, yeah, I think Wellington have a decent chance as well with Clayton Lewis coming back. I think he's vital to their game in the middle of the park. And, I expect Sandoval and Ball to be back as well. So that's almost their strongest 11.
In most people's minds, I think Wellington very much overachieved this season. But Lucas, if Western United do crash out in the first week of the finals, as all of you guys think will be the case, how do you think they'll reflect on the season gone? Do you think they'll be happy with it finishing third? They looked like they were going to finish top two for most of the season, but of course did not, and are looking quite vulnerable heading into week one of the finals.
I think it's a missed opportunity because I think they did brilliantly to get into that position, but they'll look at it that they fizzled out when it really counted, and once sort of they had played a fair few more games for a while, and then once other teams were putting the pressure on them, that they sort of didn't get over the line. But this could all be a pie in the sky thing because, Piney said, they could go out and perform as they can. But either way, Aloisi's done a brilliant job taking them from where they were last year to where they are this year. I don't think many people had them finishing third at the start of the year. So either way, it's a successful campaign, but maybe the way it's going might look at it as a bit of a missed opportunity.
It's a bit similar to Ufuk Tele's first season in charge of the Wellington Phoenix when they were third. They finished third. They were flying. It was just before COVID hit, actually. They'd won four games on the bounce. They were flying and looking for their highest ever finish, and they achieved that, even though once the league resumed after COVID, they, I think, won one of seven games. And they end up fizzling out and losing to Perth Glory in the first round of the playoffs, and all of a sudden it's all over. You know, you have this season where you're riding this momentum and you're up in the top two and the top three, and you know, everyone's talking about you, and then all it takes is a goal. I think Joel Chianese might have got the goal that got Perth the win that night, and it all comes to an end. So, obviously Phoenix fans will hope that the same thing happens to Western United. I think John Aloisi can be really proud of his season. He's got the most out of his players. He's been very consistent with the selections. I think 8 or 9 guys have started 20 or more games. I mean, that's what Sydney used to be like. Arnie used to put out the same team pretty much every week, and Corica continued that trend. Western United have used pretty much the same guys with their injuries, obviously, into the bargain. But I think the Adelaide Central Coast Mariners game will be a better game. But I think Saturday night will be really intriguing.
Well, two-legged semi-finals, of course. And if Wellington win that elimination final against Western United, they'll play Melbourne City. If Western United win, they'll compete in the famous Westgate Derby against Melbourne Victory. But let's get some score predictions. You all think Wellington's going to win, but how much by? Lucas?
I'm going, I think it might go to extra time. I'm going Wellington 2-1 in extra time.
Peter.
I'll say 2-0 Wellington.
And finally, Piney.
Yeah, I had 2-0 as well. I think, yeah, they'll get a goal at some stage in the first half, and then as Western United push, I fancy Gary Hooper off the bench to score the second and seal it for Wellington.
Oh, hopefully it's a very, very exciting game that Lucas is no doubt very, very excited for. Adelaide United versus the Central Coast Mariners out at Hind Marsh Stadium. He'll be at that one, no doubt. How do you see that one going?
Yeah, I think this is going to be really, really tight. I think Andrew Howe, the brilliant statistician, put a stat up the other day of there's only been about four or five teams that have ever in Australian football won five in a row leading into the finals. And Mariners and Adelaide are two of them. So both teams in brilliant form. Mariners are probably the team I wanted to avoid out of everyone first round because I think they're really, really dangerous. Feel like maybe we've just got enough quality at home. If we're away, I'd be tipping Mariners. But, yeah, I think I'm just going to – I think Adelaide will have enough quality. It's definitely – could be another one that goes to extra time. Or even penalties, because there's not much between these two sides, and it's a testament to the league we've had this season with two sides that play a lot of attacking football and a lot of young players. So I think, like Punny said, I think this will probably be the game of the round.
Yeah, I'm absolutely pumped for it. It should be an awesome spectacle out at Cooper Stadium. Piney, what are you expecting coming into this one?
Yeah, a cracking game of football. That's what I'm expecting, and that's what I'm hoping to see. You know, when two teams that are on the top of their game collide, you hope that it'll be a game worthy of their standing. I watched the Mariners absolutely dismantle Wellington on their homecoming over Easter. You know, they'd been away for so long. There was all this expectation that Wellington would come home and the Mariners crashed the party. You know, Jason Cummings, what an acquisition he's been for that team. Just the way that he's affecting every game of football he plays. You know, Nkololo is getting better and better all the time. I like the way he plays. Yeranya, of course, and Garen Kuol. I mean, it's such an exciting team. But then Adelaide, you look at Adelaide and you think, you know what? Carl Viet, as we said before, has them playing above the sum of their parts as well. So, look, I'm hoping for a seven-goal thriller with Adelaide nicking it 4-3 right at the end. How's that?
Pine, a commentary-related question for you. Thriller is a word that gets thrown around a lot. How many goals do you think have to be in a game to call it a thriller, minimum?
Yeah, it's a great question. I was going to say a five-goal thriller. That doesn't seem quite enough. If you win 3-2, maybe it's a five-goal thriller. I think it probably needs a four-goal thriller. You can have a thrilling game, but I think a thriller probably has to have minimum five in it.
I believe Michael Turner, our lovely Kick 360 zone, referred to a nil-all draw between Western Sydney and Adelaide United as a thriller on the PA. Am I remembering that right?
Well, with the job he does, you couldn't exactly call it a bore draw over the PA, could you? Peter, do you predict that Adelaide versus Central Coast is going to be a thriller?
Yeah, I was going to say 3-3, actually. 3-0. Ooh, this game, I think I'd love to see Central Coast go through, but I think Adelaide are a bit more solid. I think they have more experience, and the fact that they're at home, just think they have slightly better chances. But yeah, Jason Cummings, Nkololo, Urania, Müller, Nisbet, all and very exciting team. I think they're the best team to watch this year, have been the best team to watch this year, especially in 2022.
Lucas, score prediction for this one?
I actually think this is going to go down to penalties. I'm going to go Adelaide on penalties, but I reckon maybe 1-0 in normal time and then goes all the way out to penalties. Adelaide have been a lot better defensively and sort of tempered how attacking they are recently, sort of maybe to compensate with playing a pretty young back line. But, yeah, I think it might go all the way to penalties and just Adelaide to win. But, yeah, it's going to be very, very tight.
Peter, you kind of gave your prediction there, but yeah. when do you think the goals are coming, and how do you see it playing out margin-wise across the game?
Oh, that's a tough one. But I just wanted to say about when Lucas said defense, I wanted to give a shout-out to Alex Popovich. The kid's fantastic. I think he's been Adelaide's best center back this year, and what a footballer.
And Adelaide's center backs was a real point of worry at the start of the season. Jacob Tratt and George Timothée were quite frankly pretty poor. And then Jakobsen was having to hold the fort, even though a lot of people were surprised he got a new contract in the first place. But when he came in, he also made Lachie Barr a lot better, which is a testament to a guy of his age.
Yeah, and I think actually Popovich looks like the leader of that back two, which is even more impressive.
Mm. Yeah, echo those sentiments, and huge shout out to Alex Popovich. You can absolutely take it to the bank that he's the one person tuning into the KitCast right now, the live stream. Party, yeah, your score prediction for Adelaide versus Central Coast.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with a 4-3 to Adelaide. The other thing that will come into this, and we've talked about extra time and penalties as well, is remember it's quite a short turnaround before the first leg of the semi-final. So if the game on Sunday does go to extra time, I think the semi-final is the Wednesday, isn't it? So
yeah.
While Adelaide won't have to go very far if they win it, for example, that is a short turnaround between games. And I'm sure the two Melbourne sides will be hoping that, you know, that their opponents do have to expend a bit of extra energy. If it's going to be 4-3, and we've talked about the defence defense of Adelaide, and also you look at Central Coast with Bitigetti and Rolls, obviously, they've been defensively good too. So if it's going to be a 4-3 thriller, I better at least give it extra time as well. So 2-2 at the end of 90 minutes, 4-3 to Adelaide after extra time.
Spoke about the word thriller there, Piney. Have you got a favourite word that you like to throw into your commentary?
Gee, I don't know. There's probably words I use a bit too much. often, actually, when I was coaching my son's junior football team, they'd often give me a word to insert. They'd say, "Oh, you've got to say the word perpendicular, or you know, banana." Or something like that, and you'd have to try and find a way. Yeah, I tried to because I sort of thought, well, you know, they've gone to the trouble of getting their heads together and coming up with a word, so I better try and do it. You know, there's words, and the obviously the best ones are the ones that have absolutely no relationship to football at all, like spaceman or something like that. You've got to try and get that into a commentary. But yeah.
I've got a story related to that. For people that don't know, my dad Dom was a commentator in the A-League on the radio and used to
do it with
Fox as well. And the B-League had a segment in about 2012 of Geronimo of saying how long could people say his name. And I saw that and said to Dad, you know what, if Geronimo scores, it was against Wellington actually, he scored two. If Geronimo scores, you should go Geronimo. And he went, I'm not going to do that. And then he scores two and Cassio scores the other one. And I come home and from the game and say, did you do it? He's like, yeah, I did it three times.
And I remember Tom doing that. I remember those. I remember thinking to myself, man, he's playing that up. And then yeah, I heard that story afterwards. Yeah, terrific, terrific bloke, Don. Please pass on my regards when you're talking to him, Lucas.
I will.
No, a little challenge for the three of you. We probably haven't got too long left in this show and not too many people are tuning in, so we can throw all the professionalism out the window. If you could all insert, all the Kick360 guys will love this, if you could insert the word dangle into some kind, a portion of your speech, by the end of the show, you will each win a little slice of my heart. So there's a challenge for you. But as we get onto that, as you keep that in your minds, we'll go back to the question that was given to us 51 minutes ago at 9:03 p.m. by Shah Nen about the final. It's about the game that we spoke about before. Shah Nen asks to Piney, the Knicks looked much better with a formation change in the second half, Piney. What way would you set up the side against Western United?
Yeah, I think this is pretty easy, really. I think Ufuktalo's got to go back to a back four. And his preferred formation is back four, then two defensive midfielders, two tens, and two front men. And so it's a 4-2-2-2 for me. And it's a pretty simple team to pick as far as I'm concerned. Ollie Sales in goal, Tim Payne's your right back, Finn Sermon and Scott Wooten are your centre backs, Sam Sutton on the left. Clayton Lewis clearly comes back in. He didn't look like he'd been out for nine games to me. He didn't miss a beat in that second half. I think he sits there alongside Nicholas Pennington, although I think Ben Old's got a case to be in the starting 11. That pushes Gail Sandoval forward alongside Radio Piscopo, and David Ball comes back in with Ben Wayne up top. That leaves Ben Old on the bench with Gary Hooper to come on and add some impetus. But for me, in terms of the formation, it's got to be 4-2-2-2. That's worked against Western United in the past, and that's how I believe he'll do it.
Not long left to go on the show. You've used up a good 30, 45 seconds. You didn't say dangle, so hopefully you can do it.
I got so caught up in the formation and tactical discussion, I completely forgot to say, I forgot what the word was. I almost said spaceman.
Dangle or some derivation of that. Something rooted in that base word. But I'll just ask you, does anyone not think that it's going to be a Melbourne Derby grand final before we kind of give our predictions for the champions? No, right? Everyone's going Melbourne for Derby, a Melbourne Derby grand final. Lucas, who is going to win that Melbourne Derby grand final?
Melbourne victory for me. I think just the stage that it'll be, being essentially a victory home game, obviously they're going to have more fans. I presume it'll be at Marvel. I'm not 100% sure.
If it's a Melbourne Derby grand final, it'll be Amy, you'd say, because Melbourne City will be the home team.
Okay. But they made, well, Central Coast Mariners were the home team against Western Sydney, and they ended up playing in Allianz. So I think they'll just go wherever they can get the most people, if Marvel's free, which I'm pretty sure it is that weekend. But either way, I think it'll be Melbourne victory. I think in a one-off game, I think they're the best team in the competition.
Arnie.
Yeah, I have to go with Melbourne victory as well. I love the way Melbourne City play their football, and you know, they're terrifically well coached with some wonderful players, and that, you know, that attacking quartet is just, you know, wonderful to watch. But I think, you know, if you dangle a carrot in front of these two sides, and you know, and that carrot is the you know, the silverware at the end of that game, then I think it's probably Melbourne victory who will respond to the dangling and grab the toilet seat.
Double dangle from Party.
Double dangle.
On that weekend of the 27th, 28th, 29th, there is an AFL game at Marvel Stadium on the Sunday, but not on the Saturday. Available on Saturday. If they want to use it, Petter, who is going to win that Melbourne Derby grand final that you predict will be the matchup?
I'll go with victory as well. I think City just have the best individuals, but at the moment, victory are just flying. They're clicking at the perfect moment. And at the start of the season, you could see that, like, they were more transition-based in their games. Like, they didn't really dominate all of their games. But in the last couple of weeks, they have been fantastic, I think. If they don't have any major injuries until the grand final, I think they should win it.
Would semi-final performances change your opinion on that you've just given, Petter?
Maybe if City go and trash someone, maybe it could change my opinion a bit, but I think they look a bit shaky at the moment, especially without Aiden O'Neill and Berenguer. If they're not back, I think they'll struggle.
Lucas, have you got anything else to add? One last opportunity to say the magic word.
Oh, well, no, I wouldn't want to take away from the magical tune that you've been dangling throughout this entire show, so I'll leave it.
Very, very nice. Well played. Well played. Petter, you're the only one that said it. Can you work it in there somewhere?
Maybe next time, if you let me dangle around the podcast, I'll do it.
Beautiful.
Three for three. Very nice. Very nicely done. And as Lucas said, we have been dangling the end of episode song for most of this. So we'll play that. But first of all, I'd like to thank, well, this is where we're going to wrap it up. So first of all, I'd like to thank everyone who's tuned in, and the three of you who've all come on. Lucas, first to you. Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you very much for having me, and thanks for everyone for listening. I'm sure we'll be back again over the finals.
Petter, thank you very much for coming on, and I've enjoyed that sign in the background. Stop, enjoy your life. Love a bit of optimism here on the KitCast, so thanks for coming on, Matt.
thanks, guys. Thanks for the chat. It was great. See you again soon.
Always good to have you, Matt. And Piney, first time on the show. Maybe see you back on the show sometime soon, sometime in the future. Thank you very much for this time, though. It's been good.
Yeah, I hope it won't be the last time. It's been a real pleasure, guys. It's been great chatting football with you. Thanks for the invitation.
Now, the famous video that we've been, I don't think you can call it famous yet, but we'll be famous very, very soon. This video that we've been dangling throughout the show and on the Kick 360 group chats, I guess, for the people who are tuning in who are in that. Lucas and I turned into the 21st century versions of Lennon and McCartney today. We put together a bit of a song to the tune of We Didn't Start the Fire, of course, by Billy Joel. It's the end of the regular season, of course. So some highlights and favourite moments and funny moments, best moments, just all the memorable moments from throughout the season. We've put them into a song. It's ended a bit short because we're going to add a couple verses after the final series. A few people from Kick 360 have contributed. Tom Williams has sent me his contribution in the last 10 minutes. So if you're tuning into the video, you won't hear his contribution, but if you're tuning into the podcast version, you probably will, because I'll edit it in. But for now, guys, thank you very, very much for tuning in. And here is that video, if I can find it. Give me 3 seconds. Here we go. A-League men, Paramount, Channel 10, marquee players in Sturridge wants a new trim. The Jets signed Devlin, then he went to Scotland. Victory get Popovich, new 11 on the pitch.
City win in round one, Sydney derby is a dud. Victory claimed the West Gate, MacArthur's pitch is crap. Sturridge draws the glory fans, we're starting games in his plans. Always injured real nice, we've got no fucking rewind.
21-22 season, didn't start on fire, running in the mire. The 21-22 season, we were trying to watch it, but the tech guys botched it.
VAR going wrong, Phoenix back and Wollongong. Bull crap graphics, fuck lucky in the cup. Glory also on the road, Becker going sicko mode, Silver Lake, buzzer steak.
Wait, why are we going on a break?
With Android Auto and wireless Apple CarPlay, the Isuzu D-Max is born to rock.
Federici goes his own way, passing stats are dodgy, joint presser Corica and Nick Montgomery. Pinata whacks a bot, Robbo cannot stop the rot, Christmas derby delays, shit talking from Tony Sage.
The 21-22 season, Victoria's dominating, worthwhile fresh playing. The 21-22 season, at the far as hope, it's only sales on Celtics.
New year come, dog, Meredith, cops, bait, fog, Mariners have choked again, comebacks for the red men. Isaias says Vamos, Sean Evans is fuck off, Cragen on the central coast, Scorpion Gabriccio.
The Sky Blues are pensioners, do we need to mention Perth? No talk of Raw 2, happens when you're near the spoon. Margot, rugby move, Richie's got a lot to prove. Ibisuki off the mark, why is Strathead Amy Park?
The 21-22 season, games on a Wednesday Arvo, can't watch out of Arvo. The 21-22 season, Burger Crowd's been dying, going down to the wire.
City are in Thailand, how did Reddy not get banned? Vic's top, Studge flopped, Western title push got stopped. Wellington getting slapped, goal difference really crap. Home time for the Knicks, somehow got into the six.
Ruben players red face, Melbourne's got a title race. Untaking guard, what else do I have to say?
21-22 season,
sorry, New South Wales, it's been a fail. The 21-22 season, City want the toilet, but will victory spoil it?
Now fuck off.
Ha 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 ha